in the dirt, and there was his neck, right in front of her. Arya slid the dagger out and drew it across his throat, as smooth as summer silk. His blood covered her hands in a hot gush, and he tried to shout, but there was blood in his mouth as well. "Velar Magullis," she whispered as he died. When he stopped moving, she picked up the coin. Outside the walls of Harrenhal, a wolf howled long and loud. She lifted the bar, set it aside, and pulled open the heavy oak door. By the time Hot Pie and Gendry came up with the horses, the rain was falling hard. "You killed him!" Hot Pie gasped. "What did you think I would do?" Her fingers were sticky with blood, and the smell was making her mare skittish. "It's no matter," she thought, swinging up into the saddle. "The rain will wash them clean again." Sansa. The throne room was a sea of jewels, furs, and bright fabrics. Lords and ladies filled the back of the hall and stood beneath the high windows, jostling like fishwives on a dock. The denizens of Joffrey's court had striven to outdo each other today. Jalabar Zoe was all in feathers, a plumage so fantastic and extravagant that he seemed like to take flight. The High Septon's crystal crown fired rainbows through the air every time he moved his head. At the council table, Queen Cersei shimmered in a cloth of gold gown slashed in burgundy velvet, while beside her, Varys fussed and simpered in a lilac brocade. Moonboy and Sedontas wore new suits of motley, clean as a spring morning. Even Lady Tanda and her daughters looked pretty in matching gowns of turquoise silk and vair, and Lord Giles was coughing into a square of scarlet silk trimmed with golden lace. King Joffrey sat above them all, amidst the blades and barbs of the Iron Throne. He was in crimson samite, his black mantle studded with rubies, on his head his heavy golden crown. Squirming through a press of knights, squires, and rich townfolk, Sansa reached the front of the gallery just as a blast of trumpets announced the entry of Lord Tywin Lannister. He rode his warhorse down the length of the hall and dismounted before the Iron Throne. Sansa had never seen such armor, all burnished red steel, inlaid with golden scrollwork and ornamentation. His rundles were sunbursts. The roaring lion that crowned his helm had ruby eyes, and a lioness on each shoulder fastened a cloth of gold cloak so long and heavy that it draped the hindquarters of his charger. Even the horse's armor was gilded, and his bardings were shimmering crimson silk emblazoned with the lion of Lannister. The Lord of Castle Rock made such an impressive figure that it was a shock when his destrier dropped a load of dung right at the base of the throne. Joffrey had to step gingerly around it as he descended to embrace his grandfather and proclaim him savior of the city. Sansa covered her mouth to hide a nervous smile. Joff made a show of asking his grandfather to assume governance of the realm, and Lord Tywin solemnly accepted the responsibility, "until your grace does come of age." Then squires removed his armor, and Joff fastened the hand's chain of office around his neck. Lord Tywin took a seat at the council table beside the queen. After the destrier was led off and his homage removed, Cersei nodded for the ceremonies to continue. A fanfare of brazen trumpets greeted each of the heroes as he stepped between the great oak doors. Heralds cried his name and deeds for all to hear, and the noble knights and highborn ladies cheered as lustily as cutthroats at a cockfight. Pride of place was given to Mace Tyrell, the Lord of Highgarden, a once powerful man gone to fat, yet still handsome. His sons followed him in, Sir Loras and his older brother, Sir Garland the Gallant. The three dressed alike in green velvet trimmed with sable. The king descended the throne once more to greet them, a great honor. He fastened about the throat of each a chain of roses wrought in soft yellow gold, from which hung a golden disc with the lion of Lannister picked out in rubies. The roses support the lion, as the might of Highgarden supports the realm, proclaimed Joffrey. If there is any boon you would ask of me, ask, and it shall be yours. And now it comes, thought Sansa. Your grace, said Sir Loras, I beg the honor of serving in your king's guard to defend you against your enemies. Joffrey drew the Knight of Flowers to his feet and kissed him on his cheek. Done, brother. Lord Tyrell bowed his head. There is no greater pleasure than to serve the king's grace. If I were deemed worthy to join your royal council, you will find none more loyal or true. Joff put a hand on Lord Tyrell's shoulder and kissed him when he stood. Your wish is granted. Sir Garland Tyrell, 5 years senior to Sir Loras, was a taller, bearded version of his more famous younger brother. He was thicker about the chest and broader at the shoulders, and though his face was comely enough, he lacked Sir Loras's startling beauty. Your Grace, Garland said when the king approached him. I have a maiden sister, Margaery, the delight of our house. She was to wed Renly Baratheon, as you know, but Lord Renly went to war before the marriage could be consummated, so she remains innocent. Margaery has heard tales of your wisdom, courage, and chivalry, and has come to love you from afar. I beseech you to send for her, to take her hand in marriage, and to wed your house to mine for all time. King Joffrey made a show of looking surprised. Sir Garland, your sister's beauty is famed throughout the Seven Kingdoms, but I am promised to another. A king must keep his word. Queen Cersei got to her feet in a rustle of skirts. Your Grace, in the judgment of your small council, it would be neither proper nor wise for you to wed the daughter of a man beheaded for treason, a girl whose brother is in open rebellion against the throne even now. Sir, your councillors beg you, for the good of your realm, set Sansa Stark aside. The Lady Margaery will make you a far more suitable queen. Like a pack of trained dogs, the lords and ladies in the hall began to shout their pleasure. Margaery, they called. Give us Margaery. And no traitor queens. Tyrell, Tyrell. Joffrey raised a hand. I would like to heed the wishes of my people, mother, but I took a holy vow. The High Septon stepped forward. Your Grace, the gods hold betrothal solemn, but your father, King Robert of blessed memory, made this pact before the Starks of Winterfell had revealed their falseness. Their crimes against the realm have freed you from any promise you might have made. So far as the faith is concerned, there is no valid marriage contract betwixt you and Sansa Stark. A tumult of cheering filled the throne room, and cries of Margaery, Margaery, erupted all around her. Sansa leaned forward, her hands tight around the gallery's wooden rail. She knew what came next, but she was still frightened of what Joffrey might say, afraid that he would refuse to release her even now, when his whole kingdom depended upon it. She felt as if she were back again, on the marble steps outside the great Septa Baelor, waiting for her prince to grant her father mercy, and instead hearing him command Ilion Payne to strike off his head. Please, she prayed fervently, make him say it, make him say it. Lord Tywin was looking at his grandson. Joffrey gave him a sullen glance, shifted his feet, and helped Sir Garland Tyrell to rise. The gods are good. I am free to heed my heart. I will wed your sweet sister, and gladly, sir. He kissed Sir Garland on a bearded cheek as the cheers rose all around them. Sansa felt curiously light-headed. I am free. She could feel eyes upon her. I must not smile, she reminded herself. The queen had warned her, no matter what she felt inside, the face she showed the world must look distraught. I will not have my son humiliated, Cersei said. Do you hear me? Yes, but if I am not to be queen, what will become of me? That will need to be determined. For the moment, you shall remain here at court as our ward. I want to go home. The Queen was irritated by that. You should have learned by now, none of us get the things we want. I have, though, Sansa thought. I am free of Joffrey. I will not have to kiss him, nor give him my maidenhood, nor bear him children. Let Margaery Tyrell have all that, poor girl. By the time the outburst died down, the Lord of Highgarden had been seated at the council table, and his sons had joined the other knights and lordlings beneath the windows. Sansa tried to look forlorn and abandoned as other heroes of the Battle of the Blackwater were summoned forth to receive their rewards. Paxter Redwine, Lord of the Arbor, marched down the length of the hall flanked by his twin sons, Horror and Slubber, the former limping from a wound taken in the battle. After them followed Lord Mathis Rowan, in a snowy doublet with a great tree worked upon the breast in gold thread. Lord Randall Tarly, lean and balding, a great sword across his back in a jeweled scabbard. Sir Kevin Lannister, a thick-set balding man with a close-trimmed beard. Sir Adam Marbrand, coppery hair streaming to his shoulders. The great Western lords, Lyddon, Crakehall, and Brax. Next came four of lesser birth who had distinguished themselves in the fighting. The one-eyed knight, Sir Philip Foot, who had slain Lord Bryce Caron in single combat. The free rider, Lothar Brune, who cut his way through 600 fuss-away men-at-arms to capture Sir John of the Green Apple and kill Sir Brian and Sir Edward of the Red, thereby winning himself the name Lothar Apple-Eater. Willett, a grizzled man-at-arms in the service of Sir Harry Swift, who pulled his master from beneath his dying horse and defended him against a dozen attackers, and a downy-cheeked squire named Josmin Peckledon, who had killed two knights, wounded a third, and captured two more, though he could not have been more than 14. Willett was borne in on a litter, so grievous were his wounds. Sir Kevin had taken a seat beside his brother, Lord Tywin. When the herald had finished telling of each hero's deeds, he rose. "It is his grace's wish that these good men be rewarded for their valour. By his decree, Sir Philip shall henceforth be Lord Philip of House Foot, and to him shall go all the lands, rights, and incomes of House Carron. Lothar Brune to be raised to the estate of knighthood, and granted lands and keep in the Riverlands at War's End. To Josmin Peckledon, a sword and suit of plate, his choice of any war horse in the royal stables, and knighthood as soon as he shall come of age. And lastly, for Goodman Willett, a spear with a silver-banded haft, a hauberk of new forged ringmail, and a full helm with visor. Further, the good man's sons shall be taken into the service of House Lannister at Casterly Rock, the elder as a squire and the younger as a page, with a chance to advance to knighthood if they serve loyally and well. To all this, the king's hand and the small council consent. The captains of the king's warships, Wild Wind, Prince Aemon, and River Arrow, were honored next, along with some under-officers from God's Grace, Lance, Lady of Silk, and Ram's Head. As near as Sansa could tell, their chief accomplishment had been surviving the battle on the river, a feat that few enough could boast. Halin the Pyromancer and the masters of the Alchemist Guild received the king's thanks as well, and Halin was raised to the style of Lord, though Sansa noted that neither lands nor castle accompanied the title, which made the alchemist no more a true lord than Varys was. A more significant lordship by far was granted to Sir Lancel Lannister. Joffrey awarded him the lands, castle, and rights of House Dairy, whose last child lord had perished during the fighting in the Riverlands, leaving no true-born heirs of lawful Dairy blood, but only a bastard cousin. Sir Lancel did not appear to accept the title. The talk was his wound might cost him his arm or even his life. The imp was said to be dying as well, from a terrible cut to the head. When the herald called, "Lord Petar Baelish," he came forth, dressed all in shades of rose and plum, his cloak patterned with mockingbirds. She could see him smiling as he knelt before the Iron Throne. He He looked so pleased. Sansa had not heard of Littlefinger doing anything especially heroic during the battle, but it seemed he was to be rewarded all the same. Sir Kevin got back to his feet. It is the wish of the King's Grace that his loyal counselor, Pataia Baelish, be rewarded for faithful service to crown and realm. Be it known that Lord Baelish is granted the castle of Harrenhal, with all its attendant lands and incomes, there to make his seat and rule henceforth as Lord Paramount of the Trident. Pataia Baelish and his sons and grandsons shall hold and enjoy these honors until the end of time, and all the lords of the Trident shall do him homage as their rightful liege. The king's hand and the small council consent. On his knees, Littlefinger raised his eyes to King Joffrey. I thank you humbly, Your Grace. I suppose this means I'll need to see about getting some sons and grandsons. Joffrey laughed, and the court with him. Lord Paramount of the Trident, Sansa thought, and Lord of Harrenhal as well? She did not understand why that should make him so happy. The honors were as empty as the title granted to Hailyn the Pyromancer. Harrenhal was cursed. Everyone knew that. And the Lannisters did not even hold it at present. Besides, the lords of the Trident were sworn to Riverrun and House Tully, and to the king in the north. They would never accept Littlefinger as their liege. Unless they are made to. Unless my brother and my uncle and my grandfather are all cast down and killed. The thought made Sansa anxious, but she told herself she was being silly. Rob has beaten them every time. He'll beat Lord Baelish too, if he must. More than 600 new knights were made that day. They had held their vigil in the great Sept of Baelor all through the night, and crossed the city barefoot that morning to prove their humble hearts. Now they came forward, dressed in shifts of undyed wool, to receive their knighthoods from the King's Guard. It took a long time, since only three of the brothers of the White Sword were on hand to dub them. Mandan Moore had perished in the battle. The Hound had vanished. Aerys Oakheart was in Dorne with Princess Mycella, and Jaime Lannister was Robb's captive. So the King's Guard had been reduced to Balon Swan, Merrin Trant, and Osmond Kettleblack. Once knighted, each man rose, buckled on his sword belt, and stood beneath the windows. Some had bloody feet from their walk through the city, but they stood tall and proud all the same, it seemed to Sansa. By the time all the new knights had been given their sirs, the hall was growing restive, and none more so than Joffrey. Some of those in the gallery had begun to slip quietly away, but the notables on the floor were trapped, unable to depart without the king's leave. Judging by the way he was fidgeting atop the Iron Throne, Joff would willingly have granted it, but the day's work was far from done. For now, the coin was turned over, and the captives were ushered in. There were great lords and noble knights in that company, too. Sir old Lord Celtigar, the Red Crab, Sir Bonifer the Good, Lord Estamont, more ancient even than Celtigar, Lord Varna, who hobbled the length of the hall on a shattered knee, but would accept no help. Sir Mark Mullendore, grey-faced, his left arm gone to the elbow. Fierce Red Runnet of Griffin Roost. Sir Dermot of the Rainwood. Lord Willem and his sons, Joshua and Elias. Sir John Fussaway. Sir Timon the Scrapesword. Orain the Bastard of Driftmark. Lord Stademan, called Penny Lover, hundreds of others. Those who had changed their allegiance during the battle needed only to swear fealty to Joffrey, but the ones who had fought for Stannis until the bitter end were compelled to speak. Their words decided their fate. If they begged forgiveness for their treasons and promised to serve loyally henceforth, Joffrey welcomed them back into the king's peace and restored them to all their lands and rights. A handful remained defiant, however.
"Do not imagine this is done, boy,"
warned one, the bastard son of some Florent or other.
"The Lord of Light protects King Stannis, now and always. All your swords and all your scheming shall not save you when his hour comes."
"Your hour is come right now," Joffrey beckoned to Sir Ilyan Payne to take the man out and strike his head off. But no sooner had that one been dragged away than a knight of solemn mien, with a fiery heart on his surcoat, shouted out, "Stannis is the true king. A monster sits the Iron Throne, an abomination born of incest." "Be silent," Sir Kevin Lannister bellowed. The knight raised his voice instead. "Joffrey is the black worm eating the heart of the realm. Darkness was his father and death his mother. Destroy him before he corrupts you all. Destroy them all. Queen Whore and King Worm, Vile Dwarf and Whispering Spider, the False Flowers. Save yourselves." One of the gold cloaks knocked the man off his feet, but he continued to shout, "The Scouring Fire will come. King Stannis will return." Joffrey lurched to his feet. "I'm king. Kill him. Kill him now. I command it." He chopped down with his hand, a furious, angry gesture, and screeched in pain when his arm brushed against one of these sharp metal fangs that surrounded him. The bright crimson samite of his sleeve turned a darker shade of red as his blood soaked through it. "Mother!" he wailed. With every eye on the king, somehow the man on the floor wrestled a spear away from one of the gold cloaks and used it to push himself back up to his feet. "The throne denies him," he cried. "He is no king." Cersei was running toward the throne, but Lord Tywin remained still as a stone. He had only to raise a finger, and Sir Meron Trant moved forward with drawn sword. The end was quick and brutal. The gold cloaks seized the knight by the arms. "No king!" he cried again, as Sir Meron drove the point of his longsword through his chest. Joff fell into his mother's arms. Three maesters came hurrying forward to bundle him out through the king's door. Then everyone began talking at once. When the gold cloaks dragged off the dead man, he left a trail of bright blood across the stone floor. Lord Baelish stroked his beard while Varys whispered in his ear. "Will they dismiss us now?" Sansa wondered. A score of captives still waited, though whether to pledge fealty or shout curses, who could say? Lord Tywin rose to his feet. "We continue," he said, in a clear, strong voice that silenced the murmurs. "Those of you who wish to ask pardon for their treasons may do so. We will have no more follies." He moved to the Iron Throne, and there seated himself on a step a mere 3 feet off the floor. The light outside the windows was fading by the time the session drew to a close. Sansa felt limp with exhaustion as she made her way down from the gallery. She wondered how badly Joffrey had cut himself. They say the Iron Throne can be perilous cruel to those who are not meant to sit it. Back in the safety of her own chambers, she hugged a pillow to her face to muffle a squeal of joy. "Oh, gods be good, he did it. He put me aside in front of everyone." When a serving girl brought her supper, she almost kissed her. There was hot bread and fresh churned butter, a thick beef soup, capon and carrots, and peaches in honey. "Even the food tastes sweeter," she thought. Come dark, she slipped into a cloak and left for the Guardswood. Sir Osmond Kettleblack was guarding the drawbridge in his white armor. Sansa tried her best to sound miserable as she bid him a good evening. From the way he leered at her, she was not sure she had been wholly convincing. Dantos waited in the leafy moonlight. "Why so sad-faced?" Sansa asked him gaily. "You were there. You heard. Joff put me aside. He's done with me. He's..." He took her hand. "Oh, Jonquil, my poor Jonquil, you do not understand. Done with you? They've scarcely begun." Her heart sank. "What do you mean?" "The Queen will never let you go, never. You're too valuable, a hostage. And Joffrey, sweetling, is still king. If he wants you in his bed, he will have you. Only now it will be bastards he plants in your womb instead of true-born sons." "No," Sansa said, shocked. "He let me go, he..." Sir Dantos planted a slobbery kiss on her ear. "Be brave.
I swore to see you home. And now I can. The day has been chosen.
When? Sansa asked. When will we go?
The night of Joffrey's wedding. After the feast. All the necessary arrangements have been made. The Red Keep will be full of strangers. Half the court will be drunk, and the other half will be helping Joffrey to bed his bride. For a little while, you will be forgotten, and the confusion will be our friend.
The wedding won't be for a moon's turn yet. Marjorie Tyrell is at Highgarden. They've only now sent for her.
You've waited so long. Be patient a while longer. Here, I have something for you.
Sir Dantas fumbled in his pouch and drew out a silvery spider web, dangling it between his thick fingers. It was a hairnet of fine spun silver, the strand so thin and delicate, the net seemed to weigh no more than a breath of air when Sansa took it in her fingers. Small gems were set wherever two strands crossed, so dark they drank the moonlight. What stones are these?
Black amethyst from Ashai, the rarest kind, a deep true purple by daylight.
It's very lovely, Sansa said, thinking.
It is a ship I need, not a net for my hair. Lovelier than you know, sweet child. It's magic, you see. It's justice you hold. It's vengeance for your father.
Dantas leaned close and kissed her again.
It's home.
Theon. Maester Luan came to him when the first scouts were seen outside the walls.
My lord prince, he said, you must yield.
Theon stared at the platter of oat cakes, honey, and blood sausage they'd brought him to break his fast. Another sleepless night had left his nerves raw, and the very sight of food sickened him.
There has been no reply from my uncle?
None, the maester said. Nor from your father on Pike.
Send more birds.
It will not serve. By the time each bird reach, send them.
Knocking the platter of food aside with a swipe of his arm, he pushed off the blankets and rose from Ned Stark's bed, naked and angry.
Or do you want me dead? Is that it, Lewin? The truth now?
The small grey man was unafraid.
My order serves.
Yes, but whom?
The realm, Maester Lewin said. And Winterfell. Theon, once I taught you sums and letters, history and warcraft, and might have taught you more had you wished to learn. I will not claim to bear you any great love, no, but I cannot hate you either. Even if I did, as long as you hold Winterfell, I am bound by oath to give you counsel. So now I counsel you to yield.
Theon stooped to scoop a puddled cloak off the floor, shook off the rushes, and draped it over his shoulders.
A fire. I'll have a fire. And clean garb. Where's Wex? I'll not go to my grave in dirty clothes.
You have no hope of holding here, the maester went on. If your lord father meant to send you aid, he would have done so by now. It is the neck that concerns him. The battle for the north will be fought amidst the ruins of Moat Cailin.
That may be so, said Theon, and so long as I hold Winterfell, Sir Roderick and Stark's lord's bannermen cannot march south to take my uncle in the rear.
I'm not so innocent a warcraft as you think, old man.
I have food enough to stand a year's siege if need be.
There will be no siege. Perhaps they will spend a day or two fashioning ladders and tying grapnels to the ends of ropes, but soon enough they will come over your walls in 100 places at once. You may be able to hold the keep for a time, but the castle will fall within the hour. You would do better to open your gates and ask for mercy.
I know what kind of mercy they'll have for me.
There is a way.
I am Ironborn, Theon reminded him. I have my own way. What choice have they left me? No, don't answer. I've heard enough of your counsel.
Go and send those birds as I commanded, and tell Lauren I want to see him. And Wex as well. I'll have my mail scoured clean and my garrison assembled in the yard.
For a moment he thought the maester was going to defy him, but finally Lewin bowed stiffly.
As you command.
They made a pitifully small assembly. The iron men were few, the yard large.
The Northmen will be on us before nightfall, he told them. Sir Roderick Cassel and all the lords who have come to his call. I will not run from them. I took this castle, and I mean to hold it, to live or die as Prince of Winterfell. But I will not command any man to die with me. If you leave now, before Sir Roderick's main force is upon us, there's still a chance you may win free.
He unsheathed his longsword and drew a line in the dirt.
Those who would stay and fight, step forward.
No one spoke. The men stood in their mail and fur and boiled leather, as still as if they were made of stone. A few exchanged looks. Erzan shuffled his feet. Dick Harlaw hawked and spat. A finger of wind ruffled Endahar's long fair hair. Theon felt as though he were drowning. Why am I surprised? He thought bleakly. His father had forsaken him, his uncles, his sister, even that wretched creature Reek. Why should his men prove any more loyal? There was nothing to say, nothing to do. He could only stand there beneath the great grey walls and the hard white sky, sword in hand, waiting, waiting. Wex was the first to cross the line. Three quick steps, and he stood at Theon's side, slouching. Shamed by the boy, Black Lauren followed, all scowls. Who else? He demanded. Red Rolf came forward. Crumb, Werleg, Timorn, his brothers, Ulf the Ill, Harrag, Sheepstealer, four Harlaws and two Butleys. Kenard the Whale was the last, 17 in all. Erzan was among those who did not move, and Stig, and every man of the 10 that Asher had brought from Deepwood Mutt. Go then, Theon told them. Run to my sister. She'll give you all a warm welcome, I have no doubt. Stig had the grace at least to look ashamed. The rest moved off without a word. Theon turned to the 17 who remained. Back to the walls. If the gods should spare us, I shall remember every man of you. Black Lauren stayed when the others had gone. The castle folk will turn on us soon as the fight begins. I know that. What would you have me do? Put them out, said Lauren. Every one. Theon shook his head. Is the noose ready? It is. You mean to use it? Do you know a better way? Aye. I'll take my axe and stand on that drawbridge and let them come try me. One at a time, two, three, it makes no matter. None will pass the moat while I still draw breath. He means to die, thought Theon. It's not victory once, it's an end worthy of a song. We'll use the noose. As you say, Lauren replied, contempt in his eyes. Wex helped garb him for battle. Beneath his black surcoat and golden mantle was a shirt of well-oiled ringmail, and under that a layer of stiff boiled leather. Once armed and armored, Theon climbed the watchtower, at the angle where the eastern and southern walls come together, to have a look at his doom. The Northmen were spreading out to encircle the castle. It was hard to judge their numbers. 1,000 at least, perhaps, twice that many. Against 17? They'd brought catapults and scorpions. He saw no siege towers rumbling up the King's Road, but there was timber enough in the Wolfswood to build as many as were required. Theon studied their banners through Maester Lewin's Mirish lens tube. The Serwyn battle axe flapped bravely wherever he looked, and there were tall out trees as well, and mermen from White Harbour. Less common were the sigils of Flint and Karstark. Here and there he even saw the bull moose of the Hornwoods. But no Glovers. Asher saw to them. No Boltons from the Dreadfort. No Umbers come down from the shadow of the wall. Not that they were needed. Soon enough the boy, Clay Serwyn, appeared before the gates, carrying a peace banner and a tall staff,
to announce that Sir Roderick Cassel wished to parley with Theon Turncloak.
Turncloak?
The name was bitter as bile. He had gone to Pike to lead his father's longships against Lannisport, he remembered.
I shall be out shortly, he shouted down. Alone!
Black Lauren disapproved.
Only blood can wash out blood, he declared. Knights may keep their truces with other knights, but they are not so careful of their honour when dealing with those they deem outlaw.
Theon bristled.
I am the Prince of Winterfell, an heir to the Iron Islands. Now go find the girl and do as I told you.
Black Lauren gave him a murderous look.
Aye, Prince.
He's turned against me too, Theon realised. Of late it seemed to him as if the very stones of Winterfell had turned against him. If I die friendless and abandoned. What choice did that leave him but to live? He rode to the gatehouse with his crown on his head. A woman was drawing water from the well, and Gage the cook stood in the doorway of the kitchens. They hid their hatred behind sullen looks and faces blank as slate, yet he could feel it all the same. When the drawbridge was lowered, a chill wind sighed across the moat. The touch of it made him shiver.
It is the cold, nothing more,
Theon told himself.
A shiver, not a tremble. Even brave men shiver.
Into the teeth of that wind he rode, under the portcullis, over the drawbridge. The outer gates swung open to let him pass. As he emerged beneath the walls, he could sense the boys watching from the empty sockets where their eyes had been. Sir Roderick waited in the market astride his dappled gelding. Beside him, the direwolf of Stark flapped from a staff borne by young Clay Serwyn. They were alone in the square, though Theon could see archers on the roofs of surrounding houses, spearmen to his right, and to his left a line of mounted knights beneath the merman and trident of House Manderley.
Every one of them wants me dead.
Some were boys he'd drunk with, diced with, even wenched with. But that would not save him if he fell into their hands.
Sir Roderick,
Theon reined to a halt.
It grieves me that we must meet as foes.
My own grief is that I must wait a while to hang you.
The old knight spat onto the muddy ground.
Theon Turncloak.
I am a Greyjoy of Pike, Theon reminded him.
The cloak my father swaddled me in bore a kraken, not a direwolf.
For 10 years you have been a ward of Stark.
Hostage and prisoner, I call it.
Then perhaps Lord Eddard should have kept you chained to a dungeon wall. Instead, he raised you amongst his own sons, the sweet boys you have butchered. And to my undying shame, I trained you in the arts of war. Would that I had thrust a sword through your belly instead of placing one in your hand.
I came out to parley, not to suffer your insults. Say what you have to say, old man. What would you have of me?
Two things, the old man said. Winterfell and your life. Command your men to open the gates and lay down their arms. Those who murdered no children shall be free to walk away. But you shall be held for King Rob's justice. May the gods take pity on you when he returns.
Rob will never look on Winterfell again, Theon promised. He will break himself on Moat Cailin, as every southern army has done for 10,000 years. We hold the north now, sir.
You hold 3 castles, replied Sir Roderick. And this one I mean to take back, Turncloak.
Theon ignored that.
Here are my terms. You have until evenfall to disperse. Those who swear fealty to Balon Greyjoy as their king and to myself as Prince of Winterfell will be confirmed in their rights and properties and suffer no harm. Those who defy us will be destroyed.
Young Serwyn was incredulous.
Are you mad, Greyjoy?
Sir Roderick shook his head.
Only vain, lad. Theon has always had too lofty an opinion of himself, I fear.
The old man jabbed a finger at him.
Do not imagine that I need to wait for Rob to fight his way up the neck to deal with the likes of you. I have near 2,000 men with me, and if the tales be true, you have no more than 50.
17, in truth. Theon made himself smile. I have something better than men. And he raised a fist over his head, the signal Black Lauren had been told to watch for. The walls of Winterfell were behind him, but Sir Roderick faced them squarely and could not fail to see. Theon watched his face. When his chin quivered under those stiff white whiskers, he knew just what the old man was seeing.
He's not surprised, he thought with sadness, but the fear is there. This is Craven, Sir Roderick said. To use a child, so this is despicable.
Oh, I know, said Theon. It's a dish I tasted myself, or have you forgotten? I was 10 when I was taken from my father's house to make certain he would raise no more rebellions.
It is not the same.
Theon's face was impassive. The noose I wore was not made of hempen rope, that's true enough, but I felt it all the same. And it chafed, Sir Roderick. It chafed me raw. He'd never quite realized that until now, but as the words came spilling out, he saw the truth of them.
No harm was ever done you.
And no harm will be done your Beth, so long as you... Sir Roderick never gave him the chance to finish.
Viper,
the knight declared, his face red with rage beneath those white whiskers.
I gave you the chance to save your men and die with some small shred of honor, Turncloak. I should have known that was too much to ask of a child killer.
His hand went to the hilt of his sword.
I ought to cut you down here and now and put an end to your lies and deceits. By the gods, I should.
Theon did not fear a doddering old man, but those watching archers and that line of knights were a different matter. If the sword came out, his chances of getting back to the castle alive were small to none.
Forswear your oath and murder me, and you will watch your little Beth strangle at the end of a rope.
Sir Roderick's knuckles had gone white, but after a moment he took his hand off his sword hilt.
Truly, I have lived too long. I will not disagree, sir. Will you accept my terms? I have a duty to Lady Catelyn and House Stark. And your own house. Beth is the last of your blood.
The old knight drew himself up straight.
I offer myself in my daughter's place. Release her and take me as your hostage. Surely the Castellan of Winterfell is worth more than a child.
Not to me. A valiant gesture, old man, but I am not that great a fool.
Nor to Lord Manderley or Leobold Tallheart either, I'll wager.
Your sorry old skin is worth no more to them than any other man's.
No, I'll keep the girl, and keep her safe, so long as you do as I've commanded you. Her life is in your hands.
Gods be good, Theon. How can you do this? You know I must attack, have sworn,
if this host is still in arms before my gate when the sun sets, Beth will hang, said Theon. Another hostage will follow her to the grave at first light, and another at sunset. Every dawn and every dusk will mean a death, until you are gone. I have no lack of hostages.
He did not wait for a reply, but wheeled Smiler around and rode back toward the castle. He went slowly at first, but the thought of those archers at his back soon drove him to a canter. The small heads watched him come from their spikes, their tarred and flayed faces looming larger with every yard. Between them stood little Beth Cassell, noosed and crying. Theon put his heel into Smiler and broke into a hard gallop. Smiler's hooves clattered on the drawbridge like drumbeats. In the yard he dismounted and handed the reins to Wex.
It may stay them, he told Black Lauren. We'll know by sunset. Take the girl in till then, and keep her somewhere safe.
Under the layers of leather, steel, and wool, he was slick with sweat.
I need a cup of wine. A vat of wine would do even better.
A fire had been laid in Ned Stark's bedchamber. Theon sat beside it and filled a cup with heavy-bodied red from the castle vaults, a wine as sour as his mood. "They will attack," he thought gloomily, staring at the flames. "Sir Roderick loves his daughter, but he is still Castellan, and, most of all, a knight." Had it been Theon with a noose around his neck and Lord Balon commanding the army without, the war horns would already have sounded the attack. He had no doubt. He should thank the gods that Sir Roderick was not ironborn. The men of the Greenlands were made of softer stuff, though he was not certain they would prove soft enough. If not, if the old man gave the command to storm the castle regardless, Winterfell would fall. Theon entertained no delusions on that count. His 17 might kill 3, 4, 5 times their own number, but in the end they would be overwhelmed. Theon stared at the flames over the rim of his wine goblet, brooding on the injustice of it all. "I rode beside Robb Stark in the Whispering Wood," he muttered. He had been frightened that night, but not like this. It was one thing to go into battle surrounded by friends, and another to perish alone and despised. "Mercy," he thought miserably. When the wine brought no solace, Theon sent Wex to fetch his bow and took himself to the old inner ward. There he stood, loosing shaft after shaft at the archery butts until his shoulders ached and his fingers were bloody, pausing only long enough to pull the arrows from the targets for another round. "I saved Bran's life with this bow," he reminded himself. "Would that I could save my own." Women came to the well, but did not linger. Whatever they saw on Theon's face sent them away quickly. Behind him, the broken tower stood, its summit as jagged as a crown, where fire had collapsed the upper stories long ago. As the sun moved, the shadow of the tower moved as well, gradually lengthening, a black arm reaching out for Theon Greyjoy. By the time the sun touched the wall, he was in its grasp. "If I hang the girl, the Northmen will attack at once," he thought as he loosed the shaft. "If I do not hang her, they will know my threats are empty." He knocked another arrow to his bow. "There is no way out, none. If you had 100 archers as good as yourself, you might have a chance to hold the castle," a voice said softly. When he turned, Maester Luin was behind him. "Go away," Theon told him. "I've had enough of your counsel." "And life? Have you had enough of that, my lord prince?" He raised the bow. "One more word, and I'll put this shaft through your heart." "You won't." Theon bent the bow, drawing the grey goose feathers back to his cheek. "Care to make a wager? I am your last hope, Theon." "I have no hope," he thought. Yet he lowered the bow half an inch and said, "I will not run. I do not speak of running. Take the black. The night's watch?" Theon let the bow unbend slowly and pointed the arrow at the ground. "Sir Roderick has served House Stark all his life, and House Stark has always been a friend to the watch. He will not deny you. Open your gates, lay down your arms, accept his terms, and he must let you take the black." "A brother of the Night's Watch?" It meant no crown, no sons, no wife, but it meant life, and life with honor. Ned Stark's own brother had chosen the watch, and Jon Snow as well. "I have black garb aplenty once I tear the krakens off. Even my horse is black. I could rise high in the watch. A chief of rangers, likely even Lord Commander. Let Asher keep the bloody islands. They're as dreary as she is. If I served at East Watch, I could command my own ship. And there's fine hunting beyond the wall. As for women, what wildling woman wouldn't want a prince in her bed?" A slow smile crept across his face. "A black cloak can't be turned. I'd be as good as any man." "Prince Theon!" The sudden shout shattered his daydream. Crumb was loping across the yard. "The Northman!" He felt a sudden sick sense of dread. "Is it the attack?" Maester Lewin clutched his arm. "There's still time. Raise a peace banner." "They're fighting," Crumb said urgently. "More men came up, hundreds of them, and at first they made to join the others, but now they've fallen on them." "Is it Asher?" Had she come to save him after all? But Crumb gave a shake of his head. "No, these are Northmen, I tell you, with a bloody man on their banner." The flayed man of the Dreadfort. Reek had belonged to the bastard of Bolton before his capture, Theon recalled. It was hard to believe that a vile creature like him could sway the Boltons to change their allegiance, but nothing else made sense. "I'll see this for myself," Theon said. Maester Lewin trailed after him. By the time they reached the battlements, dead men and dying horses were strewn about the market square outside the gates. He saw no battle lines, only a swirling chaos of banners and blades. Shouts and screams rang through the cold autumn air. Sir Roderick seemed to have the numbers, but the Dreadfort men were better led and had taken the others unawares. Theon watched them charge and wheel and charge again, chopping the larger force to bloody pieces every time they tried to form up between the houses. He could hear the crash of iron axe heads on oaken shields over the terrified trumpeting of a maimed horse. The inn was burning, he saw. Black Lauren appeared beside him and stood silently for a time. The sun was low in the west, painting the fields and houses all a glowing red. A thin, wavering cry of pain drifted over the walls, and a war horn sounded off beyond the burning houses. Theon watched a wounded man drag himself painfully across the ground, smearing his life's blood in the dirt as he struggled to reach the well that stood at the center of the market square. He died before he got there. He wore a leather jerkin and a conical half-helm, but no badge to tell which side he'd fought on. The crows came in the blue dust with the evening stars. The Dothraki believe the stars are spirits of the valiant dead, Theon said. Maester Lewin had told him that a long time ago. Dothraki? The horse lords across the narrow seas. Oh, them. Black Lauren frowned through his beard. Savages believe all manner of foolish things. As the night grew darker and the smoke spread, it was harder to make out what was happening below. But the din of steel gradually diminished to nothing, and the shouts and war horns gave way to moans and piteous wailing. Finally, a column of mounted men rode out of the drifting smoke. At their head was a knight in dark armor. His rounded helm gleamed a sullen red, and a pale pink cloak streamed from his shoulders. Outside the main gate, he reined up, and one of his men shouted for the castle to open. "Are you friend or foe?" Black Lauren bellowed down.
"Would a foe bring such fine gifts?"
Red Helm waved a hand, and three corpses were dumped in front of the gates. A torch was waved above the bodies, so the defenders upon the walls might see the faces of the dead.
"The old Castellan," said Black Lauren. "With Leobold Tallheart and Clay Serwyn."
The boy lord had taken an arrow in the eye, and Sir Roderick had lost his left arm at the elbow. Maester Lewin gave a wordless cry of dismay, turned away from the battlements, and fell to his knees, sick.
"The great big Manderley was too craven to leave White Harbor, or we would have brought him as well," shouted Red Helm.
"I am saved," Theon thought. So why did he feel so empty? This was victory. Sweet victory, the deliverance he had prayed for. He glanced at Maester Lewin. "To think how close I came to yielding and taking the black."
"Open the gates for our friends."
Perhaps tonight Theon would sleep without fear of what his dreams might bring. The Dreadfort men made their way across the moat and through the inner gates. Theon descended with Black Lauren and Maester Lewin to meet them in the yard. Pale red pennons trailed from the ends of a few lances. but many more carried battle axes and great swords and shields hacked half to splinters.
How many men did you lose?
Theon asked Red Helm as he dismounted.
20 or 30.
The torchlight glittered off the chipped enamel of his visor. His helm and gorget were wrought in the shape of a man's face and shoulders, skinless and bloody, mouth open in a silent howl of anguish.
Sir Roderick had you 5 to 1.
Aye, but he thought us friends. A common mistake. When the old fool gave me his hand, I took half his arm instead. Then I let him see my face.
The man put both hands to his helm and lifted it off his head, holding it in the crook of his arm.
Reek,
Theon said, disquieted.
How did a serving man get such fine armor?
The man laughed.
The wretch is dead. He stepped closer. The girl's fault. If she had not run so far, his horse would not have lamed, and we might have been able to flee. I gave him mine when I saw the riders from the ridge. I was done with her by then, and he liked to take his turn while they were still warm. I had to pull him off and shove my clothes into his hand, calfskin boots and velvet doublet, silver chased sword belt, even my sable cloak. Ride for the Dreadfort, I told him. Bring all the help you can. Take my horse, he's swifter. And here, wear the ring my father gave me, so they'll know you came from me. He learned better than to question me. By the time they put the arrow through his back, I smeared myself with the girl's filth and dressed in his rags. They might have hanged me anyway, but it was the only chance I saw.
He rubbed the back of his hand across his mouth.
And now, my sweet prince, there was a woman promised me if I brought 200 men. Well, I brought 3 times as many. And no green boys, nor field hands neither, but my father's own garrison.
Theon had given his word. This was not a time to flinch. Pay him his pound of flesh and deal with him later.
Arag, he said, go to the kennels and bring Perla back for Ramsay.
There was a smile on his plump lips, but none in those pale, pale eyes.
Snow, my wife called me, before she ate her fingers, but I say Bolton.
His smile curdled.
So, you'd offer me a kennel girl for my good service. Is that the way of it?
There was a tone in his voice Theon did not like, no more than he liked the insolent way the Dreadfort men were looking at him.
She was what was promised.
She smells of dog shit. I've had enough of bad smells, as it happens. I think I'll have your bed warmer instead. What do you call her? Kyra?
Are you mad?
Theon said angrily.
I'll have you...
The bastard's backhand caught him square, and his cheekbone shattered with a sickening crunch beneath the lobster's steel. The world vanished in a red roar of pain. Sometime later, Theon found himself on the ground. He rolled onto his stomach and swallowed a mouthful of blood.
Close the gates!
He tried to shout, but it was too late. The Dreadfort men had cut down Red Wolf and Kennet, and more were pouring through, a river of mail and sharp swords. There was a ringing in his ears and horror all around him. Black Lauren had his sword out, but there were already 4 of them pressing in on him. He saw Ulf go down with a crossbow bolt through the belly as he ran for the great hall. Maester Lewin was trying to reach him when a knight on a warhorse planted a spear between his shoulders, then swung back to ride over him. Another man whipped a torch round and round his head and then lofted it toward the thatch roof of the stables.
Save me the phrase!
The bastard was shouting as the flames roared upward.
And burn the rest. Burn it all.
The last thing Theon Greyjoy saw was Smiler, kicking free of the burning stables, with his mane ablaze, screaming, rearing.
Tyrion. He dreamed of a cracked stone ceiling and the smells of blood and shit and burnt flesh. The air was full of acrid smoke. Men were groaning and whimpering all around.